Technically speaking.
Welcome to our Technically Untechnical Technology Talk.
A Nywick Atlantic production.
And an award-winning podcast with your hosts, Chelsea Holloway and Alex Jackson.
Hey, I like that new intro. It sounds pretty good, don't you think, Alex?
Yes, I love the new intro, and I'm excited that we won first place for the Navy Media Awards in the podcast category.
Yep, and that new voice everyone is hearing is none other than our audio tech, Joe Bullinger, who is, of course, part of our award-winning team.
Congratulations to us.
Woo-hoo! Yeah. All right, enough accolades for us. Now we got to get to the nitty-gritty of this episode. And you know what? I want to tell you a little story, Alex. At one point, I was almost a meteorologist for the Air Force, believe it or not. I thought weather was really cool, and I almost signed on the dotted line and did, you know, weather for the Air Force. But then I remembered weather's hard. I took a college in class and got a C in it, so it is not my forte. And I pivoted in public affairs it was, and I do not regret it at all. Do you have any experience with weather, Alex?
Nope, not other than listening to the weatherman and hoping for nice, warm, sunny days.
I agree with that. I love warm, sunny days. But you know what? Nywick Atlantic is very involved with weather, and we have important work that surrounds cold weather. Antarctica, to be exact.
And specifically, the Nywick Atlantic Polar Programs. You may be asking, what is that? Don't worry, we'll tell you. Coming up, we've got a roundtable-style chat with Matt Rushing, Jeff Geringer, and Mike Johnson. Then we'll share our chat with personnel specialist First Class Reggie Reyes about how his work is important in ensuring focus stays on the mission at hand. So get comfy, turn up that volume, and let's get started.
Nywick Atlantic is headquartered in Charleston, but we have a wide reach in many geographic regions, including Antarctica. Alex, when I first heard that we had a polar program, I was shocked. I was shocked we had people working so far away.
I felt the same way. So the way it works is we have scientists in Charleston working alongside our scientists who spend months at a time in Antarctica. So let's listen to the experts explain why they are there.
Thank you all for speaking with us. Can you go around and introduce yourselves?
Yes, I'm Matt Rushing. I'm the Polar Programs IPT lead over in the Air Traffic Control Engineering Division.
Hi, I'm Mike Johnson. I'm the Administrator of Meteorology for the Polar Programs IPT.
And I'm Jeff Geringer. I'm the Air Traffic Control Manager of the Polar Programs IPT.
So first off, what is the Polar Program here at Nywick Atlantic, and who is your end user?
So the Polar Programs has been at Nywick Atlantic since the 80s. We primarily support the National Science Foundation. We provide engineering services for command and control equipment, and we also forecast the weather.
So I think it's surprising for a lot of people to hear that we have a presence in Antarctica. You know, you don't necessarily think of that when you hear Nywick Atlantic, you know, and the work that we do with technology here close to Charleston and in our other areas. What all is being done there that is truly making innovative technologies and such?
Our role at Nywick Atlantic is moving aircraft, supporting the movement of aircraft through air traffic control, through meteorology, through the systems that we develop and deploy, our communication systems, all of our sensors that we have scattered across the ice shelf to measure weather, and as well as their air traffic control systems to help land the aircraft. Yeah, so Antarctica is set up as it's really the largest laboratory in the world. It is an open laboratory.
Oh, wow.
It's under an international agreement, so the entire continent is a laboratory. There's science, there's research that gets done in Antarctica that just can't be done anywhere else in the world. It has to do with the cleanness of the air, the temperatures, the ruggedness. There's a lot that goes on there at the various stations. Our reach goes worldwide, so we're dealing with anybody that's within the Antarctic Treaty. And of course, United States is the largest program in Antarctica out of all of the treaty nations, and we end up supporting a lot of efforts across those international partners.
Now, I would say for the warfighter especially, even though they're doing logistical support, it provides them training on a skill set that they can't get anywhere else. The reason why the C-130s, they're actually, we call them LC-130s because they have skis on the bottom. They were originally designed to actually monitor early warning radar sites into northern Canada and Alaska and land in open ski fields up there. So maintaining that capability to conduct logistical efforts is of value to the Department of Defense and Air Force, Navy, and the rest of the joint services.
So NIWC Atlantic's role in all of that is just basically like a jack and Jill of all trade. We supply support.
Yes. Our primary role is logistic support, which the DOD can only provide logistic support in Antarctica. It is not a military operation down there. It is science-based. It is all open. Okay. And under the presidential memorandum that authorizes it, it is a reimbursable logistic support provided by DOD is what DOD is to provide the National Science Foundation.
So we have a lot of listeners who may not know what logistical support is. Can you kind of break that down in any way? Maybe give us an example of the work you've done?
When I say logistic support, I extend that to all areas that would support the scientists on the ice.
What are some of the areas of meteorology that are part of the polar programs?
We pretty much run the entire gamut of what we forecast for, that we're forecasting not only for aviation operations, for any aircraft that are flying in and around the Antarctic continent, as well as the airspace to and from, but we're supporting all the research vessels and resupply vessels that will come in, including the Coast Guard icebreaker. And we'll also provide updates for any ground traverses that are moving along the continent to provide resupply or conducting research.
So I know that all of you all have been to Antarctica. What is that sort of like, and how does that climate sort of impact the type of work that NIWC Atlantic does there?
At least from the meteorology aspect, it's a completely unique environment just with the difference in weather patterns that we see there and the amount of impacts that it has on aviation operations, in addition to just the fact that it's really hard to land on snow and ice.
Yeah, and as far as just going to Antarctica, we bring down a wide range of professionals, so engineers, meteorologists, forecasters, weather observers, air traffic controllers, flight followers, and we're a tight group. We all work together 6 days a week, but it's a really unique and I say fun environment that we're all very lucky to be a part of.
We're definitely going to get into what it's like to be down there in just a little bit, but I kind of am curious. So I know there's a lot of work you do with meteorology. Is there a type of data collection that you're doing while you're there as well? Are you able to collect data and use that to help strengthen the Navy in any way?
Well, tangentially, yes. A lot of our data does get sent out to the broader community that the Climatic Center over in Asheville does receive all of our data and can use that to build the database, the knowledge that is out there globally for the DOD as well as the rest of the U.S. Weather enterprise.
Awesome.
Has helped the warfighter and the National Science Foundation.
Well, for meteorology, we're providing the input for pretty much all of their resupply, their logistical efforts. And so everything that comes down there has to be either lifted over by air or by sea lift.
We do have a fully joint mission within the United States. We have a large military contingent from the United States Air Force, the Air National Guard out of New York. Our C-17s come out of McCord up in Washington. The Coast Guard cutter comes in and cuts the ice for us, and Military Sealift Command actually contracts and services us through the resupply vessels as well. So it is a large joint mission across the board in Antarctica.
In addition to that logistical support, you all are out there for months and months at a time. Other than the work that you do out there, what's more of something that you've enjoyed being out on the ice, being in that element? How does that make you feel in terms of the day-to-day work that you all do?
Yeah, so there's a lot to do in Antarctica, believe it or not. So there's a lot of really great hiking. They have a lot of recreation events. You can take snowmobiles out to some of the cool sites that they have. There's a poker night. There's card games. There's just about every sport. Every night of the week is a different sport. So you have soccer night, basketball night, volleyball night. So there's plenty to do. Morale and recreation is a big part of, you know, the program and, you know, after such long weeks and difficult work. So
I would say it's also amazing just the environment you're in. I mean, we're on this little small rock island, and, you know, my first day there, I'm looking out at mountain ranges that are 10,000 feet that are just barely, you know, they look like they're right on top of you, but they're closer to 40 or 50 miles away. Just this beautiful landscape. Our folks that go out and work on the runways, you know, they're out, you know, there's penguins possibly running around the airfield while they're out there later in the season.
I was was going to ask about penguins. I was like, have you seen them? Have you seen, what other animals have you seen?
Mainly penguins, seals, and we'll see whales. You kind of have to be on the lookout for them just because the two types we see down there, you just see them when they're surfacing before they go back down. So,
what's the average temperature that you guys deal with?
During the summertime, it's actually, I call it fairly comfortable in terms of it's like 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's like a very cold winter, but it's 24-hour daylight when we're at McMurdo especially. It's during the wintertime that our folks that are down there now, they're dealing with temperatures down to minus 40 or 50 Fahrenheit on some of the colder periods. Usually it's about minus 20 or so Fahrenheit. At the McMurdo station that they're working. And for the researchers that work out of the pole or the support staff that works out there during the winter, they're getting down to minus 70 or 80 Fahrenheit.
Oh, my goodness.
And just to be clear, we don't winter over anybody at South Pole. I keep four people in McMurdo through the winter. We have a couple of technicians that maintain our airfield for emergency medical evacuations should we need them, and also the initial flights that will go in and open the station. We have one forecaster and one weather observer in town. So that's all we maintain during the winter.
Can you guys just tell us maybe like a success you had that was like work related that really showed you, hey, I'm making a difference here. I love the work I do.
Bring it back to 2018. We arrived on the ice early with our advance team in August, and the missions were complete. The C-17 was headed back to McCord Air Force Base, and we received notice of a urgent medevac, and it happened to be someone on our program, and the C-17 got noticed, and they actually turned back around over the Pacific Ocean, came back to New Zealand, and then they launched the C-17 mission south to Antarctica, and the temperatures were very, very cold. It was, I think, minus 50 when they landed, and we were able to get the patient out to the airfield within less than 24-hour notice, and that's when that was a moment where I was like, we are really making a difference here, and we potentially could have saved a life.
So can you explain what you all do in terms of your workforce and how you work both here at NIWAC Atlantic and in Antarctica?
Well, at least from the meteorology side, we run kind of a split operation when we are supporting operations. So like now we have the two people that are wintering over, so they provide that eyes forward for us for anything that's coming down. And then our forecast team that we have sits back here in Charleston and will actually forecast from our facility here on base.
Yeah, so we have a team of air traffic controllers in Antarctica, but we also have a small complement here. We can control air traffic from Charleston that are operating in Antarctica or over the Antarctic Ocean. There. So
that's really impressive how that technology can work literally around the world to make that happen.
Our mission is just so unique. I've done air traffic control pretty much all over the world, and there is nothing like what we're doing in Antarctica. The people that come down really don't know what they're getting into, and by the time they leave, they're already looking for, you know, the next year, the next season to come back.
The NIWAC family over the years have always been very supportive of the program. It's been fun to work in. It's awesome. It keeps bringing us back. There's always a new challenge every day. If it was the same over and over, it'd get boring, but it's absolutely not the same every day.
Before we wrap up, I just got to ask one more question. What's the coolest thing you guys have seen in Antarctica?
To be able to get in a helicopter and fly over the McMurdo Dry Valleys and just some of these untouched areas is absolutely breathtaking.
I mean, you walk maybe a mile or so just outside of the station, there's nothing out there. You know, it's dead silence. You know, if you're walking down towards one of the wildlife areas, you might hear a penguin or you might see, you know, a whale or a seal splashing out there.
And we just had the big Northern Lights event all over the world. I actually had the chance to see the Southern Lights, which is a pretty unique experience to see those, and just extremely beautiful, especially in the setting that we were in. So
awesome. Well, that all sounds thrilling. I wish I could see it.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate all the work you do, and thanks for being part of the NIWAC Atlantic team.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So actually, after our recording, they were telling us that only a few years ago, they had such little bandwidth that they were unable to get a lot of their data off the ice, is what they would say. But now, through a government program, they have a satellite connection, and that's making data transfer and communication so much faster and efficient. So I thought that was cool.
It was great hearing how diverse their support is, mainly providing logistical support to better enable the mission, which is similar to this month's Military Moment interview. Specialist Reyes explains how important it is to make sure all of the administrative parts of a military member's career are in ship shape so they can focus more on their mission at hand. Let's take a listen.
So can you tell me a little bit about what you do with NIWC Atlantic and your role?
Mm-hmm. So I'm an administrator, so it's like HR type work where I handle pay issues, travel, gaining and transferring people from the command and helping and assist with people transitioning out of the military as well.
And how is that important to creating information warfare solutions?
So a lot of what I do as far as my job for NIWC is behind the scenes. It's a little bit of a thankless job because it's, you know, I work in the background. So I handle a lot of just the day-to-day things that might bother somebody as far as, you know, whether they're getting paid the correct amount or their upcoming PCS transfer is going well, or if their upcoming transition out of the military in the civilian world is going well. I track that and just maintain that their focus is more on the NIWC mission while they're attached to us than having to worry about things like personal items at home.
Yeah, if you're not getting paid, you're not going to want to work. So that's very important what you do. How long have you been with the Navy?
So I've been 11 years.
So far, so good?
So far, so good. As keep reenlisting, you know, I'm enjoying the different places that it takes me and the different opportunities that I have to work.
And over the next 10 to 20 years, what do you see as the future for the Navy and technology?
So I've been fortunate or in a unique position where I can see just the different commands I've been at, the transitioning from as far as manned aircrafts to unmanned aircraft and unmanned water vehicles. So I think in the next 10 to 20 years, the way technology is going, I see a lot of the warfighting and military aspect going is very like unmanned and remote operated methods of warfare.
And how did you get interested in becoming part of the Navy? What was your interest in serving?
So my grandfather was a big role model of mine, and he was in the Army. When I was coming out of high school and I was thinking about joining the military, I looked at the different options that I had. Didn't really make a decision, so I went to college for a little while and then realized that, you know, wanting to serve was still in the background of my head, in my mind. The Navy had more jobs that I wanted to do, but unfortunately I'm colorblind, so I kind of got limited. That's how I ended up being a personnel specialist. And, you know, it's been giving me that fulfillment that I've had and trying to live up and make my grandfather proud.
We all have someone in our life that we want to make proud of what we're doing. So it's a great reason.
Absolutely. Thank you for your service and glad that you're part of the Navy.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for your support.
I love when we get the chance, Alex, to sit down with our military members who work for NIWC Atlantic. It's always great to hear why they joined and where they came from.
They do play an important part in our mission here at NIWC Atlantic.
For sure. To learn more about anything we've mentioned in the podcast, check out our social medias under NAVWAR or our NIWC Atlantic website. Links are in the description.
That wraps up another episode. Thanks for listening to our award-winning podcast. If you have a tip or story that you think should be included in this podcast, please contact us at our public affairs email address, which is listed in the description.
Naval Information Warfare Center Atlantic, also known as NIWC, is the East Coast branch of the Naval Information Warfare Systems Command within the Department of the Navy. We develop a range of technologies that provide state-of-the-art capabilities to the United States military.